Today's episode, we talk Uncle T, we talk J.J. McCarthy, we talk Georgia Bulldogs, we talk the washing machine game in Corvallis. We talk about a lot of things. Might want to keep listening.
Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
I think transitive property. If Auburn beats Alabama, Alabama beats Georgia, UMass national champ. We're two steps away from bringing that trophy to Amherst.
Russ Dellinger.
Look out as far as the passing. I think it exposed some of J.J. McCarthy. He made some really poor decisions, actually, in that game.
And SI's Pat Forty.
Hey, I mean, it's great to have this little intramural scrap between Ohio State and Michigan, but whoever advances out of that's going to lose to Georgia eventually.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod, Ross. We're there. Hi. As Michigan celebrated its 1,000th victory. 1,000 victories. Some of those were against like the Detroit YMCA, Ann Arbor High School. Early college football record holding is fantastic. But let's pretend they got 1,000. Let's say whatever, close enough. 1,000 wins. I guess it's a victory. I don't know if they're all college victories, but I don't know who was hanging out. It might have been some beasts hanging out at the Detroit YMCA back in the day. They have a big celebration down there in the field at Maryland. They win the game. You know, hey, it's a little closer than they wanted, but a victory is a victory. You can't win 1,000 without winning ugly.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And the players emerge and everyone poses for a big picture. And Jim Harbaugh in there, of course, because he's banned. And then fans come down on the field, right? There's like 10,000 Michigan fans at Maryland.
Oh, it's at least. They had one entire side, which was probably about 15,000. And then they had a sprinkle of others around the stadium. So they had at least 15,000 there. It was really impressive. So after each Maryland game, or certainly after this Maryland game, there is an on-field photo, and fans are allowed to go on the Maryland fans are allowed to go on the field for an on-field photo. They all look up at the press box and they take a big group photo. Go Terps, says the PA announcer yells. So they were opening the gates for the Maryland fans to do this. Well, there were hardly any Maryland fans left there. So Michigan fans poured on the field. Security was letting them do it. And then, you know, as this is happening, as the Michigan fans are coming on the field, and it wasn't like thousands of them, right? It's like dozens of them coming on the field. The PA announcer, and I took a video of it, and he's saying, you know, all fans off the field, all fans off the field. Now, later the video cuts off, but he said, then he started to say, visiting fans off the field, visiting right. fans off the field, because the home fans were supposed to be on the field for this team, for this big photo. It was pretty wild. There were some confrontations. I didn't get a couple on video, but they were from confrontations between security and Michigan fans. I saw there was a couple of shoves and all that, and I thought it might get really ugly. It did not, thankfully. But it was a pretty wild
they
scene.
They stormed the field, kind of. So I have just one question. Was Uncle T there?
Yeah, you know, there were plenty of, there were plenty of Uncle T's, you know. Okay. There were plenty of candidates to be Uncle T that I saw on the Maryland or on the Michigan sideline and on the field after the game, in the stands. There was a giant man, you know, he might have been 400 plus, and he had his shirt off and he was doing, you know, whipping it around his head right in the middle of the Michigan section. And I thought, hey, Uncle T, I don't know, maybe, you know, Uncle T shirt.
Tell me
Uncle
you're
T.
applying for SEC membership without telling me you're applying for SEC membership.
Yes. So it was wild. It was a wild scene. And yeah, the game was much closer. I didn't think I would be paying attention in the second half to that game. And lo and behold, Maryland had a chance to win it. And maybe they exposed a little bit if Michigan can't run the ball consistently and maybe has a couple of big play busts on defense, look out as far as the passing. I think it exposed some of J.J. McCarthy. He made some really poor decisions actually in that game, and a couple of poor passes. It was surprising to see because he's been so consistent. It's a week ahead, you know, of the game. It was interesting to see them kind of have a hiccup there.
Yeah, it's great. Michigan has given us all kinds of people pretending to be either Connor Stallions or Uncle T. It's too bad most of this blew up just a little too either close to or after Halloween, because the costumes would be endless, I would think, in this little drama. But, you know, the Michigan story, as much as Michigan wanted to contain this, I think that it just keeps unspooling a little bit more. We had Chris Partridge get fired. We have the emergence of Uncle T. We had the withdrawal of the attempt to get a temporary restraining order to get Harbaugh on the sidelines. And Michigan's still playing football and still winning games, but they're backpedaling and circling the wagons, it seems like, off the field.
Yeah, this has been a roller coaster of a story. There's been peaks and valleys for everybody, and there's been comedy along the way. There's been disputes, all of this. Uncle T was a great development, no question. It answers, perhaps, although Uncle T, A, says he's not Uncle T, and B, says he didn't actually do what the NCAA alleges and fund Connor Stallions or help fund, says Connor sold real estate. Ross talked to Uncle T.
I love the fact that he's not on the podcast. Well, Uncle T says he's not Uncle T.
Ross talked to the guy who they say is Uncle T, who says he's not Uncle T. And I don't want to know his name. I know his name. We don't want to know his name. It's just Uncle T. It's so much better. It's just so much better as Uncle T. You know, on the field, J.J. McCarthy is always, like, he was not good in that TCU game. The reason they lost TCU is because J.J. McCarthy had a bad game. There's, you know, we got to see him play really, really well against Ohio State. You have that. You have no huddle offense seemed to rattle the defense a little bit. You're not going to be able to run 32 straight on Ohio State, I don't think. There's the weight of all of this to just, you don't have Harbaugh on the sideline. Mm-hmm. You don't have a linebacker coach now. Everyone's looking around on who's the next one that could be in trouble. You know, it goes on. And us, Michigan against everybody or us against the world, whatever, is great motivation, but there's a shelf life on it. It's hard to maintain.
Yes.
And so will it be back up in fire at noon on Saturday? I don't think we're going to have to worry about everyone motivated to play this football game, whether Uncle T was just some dude, just a kindly uncle, or maybe he is kindly, but there's a lot. I mean, it's a witch's brew, man. And they're swimming in it and trying to get through. And it's one big last boulder to push up the mountain. So I don't know. Did you and Uncle T talk after the game, Ross?
No, I don't know that Uncle T was there. The real Uncle T, please stand up. But we did talk, of course, on Friday. Well, I talked to Tim Smith, a Michigan booster, on Friday, not Uncle T, Dan. He said he's not Uncle T.
Okay.
And he said that many times, including the quote of he said, Uncle T, if he is Uncle T, he said. He said if he is Uncle T, he'd rather be Uncle T than, quote, ass T. That's what he said. So it was quite a conversation on Friday, to say. It's about 35 minutes in length. While I was on the phone with him, his phone was getting blown up. I think multiple calls from random people, Michigan media, his brother, his wife, I think his daughter. It was a whole thing. It was interesting. His lawyer. It was one of the wilder conversations I've had. But he noted that he's not Uncle T. He did not fund the Connor Stallions Michigan operation. And what else did he say? He did get dismissed from the university's NIL collective. He was a member, he was in the leadership circle of the Champion Circle collective. He was dismissed because of his apparently tie to this, although he says he isn't tied to it. So there's some interesting things going on there. I found the most interesting thing I found from the conversation with him, and really the most newsworthy thing, was his relationship with Connor Stallions and some of the things that Connor has told them. The conversation started with, you know, he really didn't know Connor, right, very well. Talked to him, said hi a few times. And then later in the conversation, it was made known to me, he made known to me that he knew Connor as well as anybody in the football program. And then later on in the conversation, it was, I called Connor multiple times since he's resigned at Michigan and we've talked. And Connor told him that he funded the whole thing himself. Connor did, by selling a home for over $100,000. So, yeah, interesting conversation. I don't know where it goes from here. He said he's up to talking to the NCAA investigators if they would like to talk to him, because he has nothing to hide. And he noted, lastly, no rules were broken.
They're not talking to NCAA investigator yet is interesting, and not because I don't know what this would yield, but this is like the peril that Michigan has found itself in, put itself in. I don't want to assign where it's just where they're at, where an investigation, there's allegations that someone did something and we haven't even talked to that guy. Mm-hmm. And that is a perilous spot to be in, the middle of an ongoing investigation with leaks and info coming out, because it's just like, well, I don't, maybe Uncle T isn't Uncle T, or maybe he didn't, or maybe there's an innocent explanation. They haven't heard it. My guess is
no.
That's a smaller probability, but that is the perilous spot Michigan is in, whether it's their own doing or anyone else's.
Yeah, this is still ongoing, unraveling, perhaps spreading, and you're trying to contain it. The stance all along has been that this was contained to one rogue dude. And again, my experience in covering these things for more than three decades is it's almost never just one rogue dude. But we will see where this ends up going. But, yeah, Ross, you mentioned his wife's calling him while he's talking. Can you imagine, like, she's on the phone. What did you do? Mm. Why is everybody talking about you? Mm-hmm. Are you Uncle T? What?
You know, it's on Facebook. What happened? Jenny called. Right. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. The neighbors are all calling me. I've got, yeah.
I believe his brother texted him while I was on the phone, and he said, "Well, my brother just texted me." I said, "What did your brother text you?" He said, "My brother told me to shut the bleep up."
Oh, don't listen to your brother. Listen,
wait about 20 more minutes.
Listen to Yahoo Sports. We have much better counsel.
He did a little media tour on Friday.
Yeah,
he talked to a lot of people. Mm-hmm. He did.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, mm-hmm. All right. From a football standpoint, I did want to point out, we talked about J.J. McCarthy. That was by far his lowest efficiency rating of any game he started against Maryland, 94.96, which is bad. You know, he's been super, super efficient. He hadn't thrown a touchdown the last three games. You know, they didn't ask him to do anything against Penn State. And then when asked, did not perform well against Maryland. So, yeah, I think there's reason to at least wonder if he's struggling a little bit here going into an awfully big game against a very good defense.
Meanwhile, Ohio State 37-3 over Minnesota, much better in the second half than the first. The scores are looking a lot better. Still room for improvement for the Buckeyes, but like I said all season, just keep winning and keep trying to get better. And Kyle McCord, 20 of 30 for two TDs. Travion Henderson, 146 yards, two TDs. Big time weapon. It's his fourth 100 yard plus game in five games. And part of why you keep winning is you don't know what will happen on the other side, right? When you essentially have a one game season, they had Penn State, I guess it's, you know, or maybe they got a 1.75 season with Notre Dame and this. There could be, you know, injuries. We could not have predicted Harbaugh out, linebacker coach dismissed, Uncle T doing a media rounds and everything else. But here we are. And all of a sudden, what looked 5-6 weeks ago, like one team's looking like a juggernaut and the other one's kind of kicking around. If this isn't even right now, you can make the case the this is a very even situation. So a lot of things changed and you keep grinding. It's one of the great things about your rivalry game being at the end of the year is you build to it, you survive to it, you push to it. It's not, well, we played him in September. Boy, if we could only have gotten another crack at him. That's why traditionally the big rivalry game has been that last game, because it just makes sense. And there's certainly talk of moving this game, and it would probably make sense to move the game off the last weekend, so you don't have back-to-back games or things like that when they get rid of divisions in the Big 10 or the Big 18. But that said, we still have it, and this is one of those classics.
It's going to be phenomenal. Dan, you remember, I think we sat next to each other in the Horseshoe when they were like number one and number two the day after Bo Schembechler died. And it was like, it can't get any bigger than this. And now I kind of wonder if this one's gotten bigger than that.
I don't want like recency, or I mean, it's kind of we haven't had it yet, so I can't say recency, but I don't want to get lost in the moment. That was astounding game.
Yeah.
That 1-2. Also, there was only two spots in the playoff.
Right.
It wasn't like last year they've had the games. Last year they had the game, both teams made the play. The element of the, anytime you have violations or a villain on one side or the other, it ramps it up for the other team. And Harbaugh has certainly become that villain. Urban Meyer was that villain before. You just add the anger and the intensity and all of that. I mean, Schembechler passing away, like even the dead Schembechler band, like doing an honor.
They changed their name for like a week to, you know.
Yeah, something like, yeah, Horseshoe Heroes or something. Then it went back. I don't know. It's as good, though. It's as good. I agree.
Yeah, it's huge, huge.
I don't want to get lost in it, but I mean, would it be better if Harbaugh is back or not?
Yeah. Yes. It would be better if we were standing on the sideline, if we were out there pounding J.J. McCarthy's shoulder pads before the game and catching passes and doing all the weird stuff he does. And then, you know, just, he's not super demonstrative during the game, but still, you want him out there. So without him on the sidelines, that does temper a little bit, I think, of the in-stadium electricity. But my God, the buildup this week is just going to be incredible.
Yeah, fantastic.
Yeah, and in the way Ohio State, you mentioned the way Ohio State's playing, they I think their last three games, they've outscored their opponent 110-22. It's been really impressive. They've been kind of rolling the last few weeks and kind of got that running game going, and Kyle McCord's playing good. Well, and the defense has played well all year. This strikes me as kind of a lower scoring, nasty. I'm sure it's going to be cold. Haven't looked at the weather. I wonder how the weather will be, actually.
30s and gray skies. That's the
there you go. Boom. Book it.
Non-negotiable.
There's a dual. Yeah. There's a bi-state. They have a treaty. They have a part of the treaty. They had a war once over who would get Ohio, Toledo, and Ohio won. But part of the deal was the Ohio State Michigan bad weather only. So. 39 and gray will be the tops allowable. Actually, sometimes it's not that bad, and it's jarring. It's jarring when it's sunny and 52.
It is. Don't like it. So the forecast for now, the high of 35, low of 27, cloudy. Perfect.
Yep, there you go.
Yep, that's it. Yeah, we don't need the snow again. Well, maybe. Anyway, Pat, you checked in on the national champs. The season's over, right? Georgia? Good Lord. Good Lord.
Yeah. Hey, I mean, it's great to have this little intramural scrap between Ohio State and Michigan, but whoever advances out of that's going to lose to Georgia eventually. That's my stance. Georgia just looks phenomenal. They have gone through, you know, they didn't play anybody for most of the season. Then they've gone through a pretty good gauntlet here of Missouri, Mississippi, Tennessee, and they've gotten better and better and better through each of those three games. 101,000 people there. Dolly Parton's in the house. Peyton Manning's in the house. Tennessee scores on the first play, goes 75-yard run. And then after that, Georgia's like, never mind. We're here to kill you. And they did. And they're just such a complete team right now. They're the top five nationally in scoring offense, top five nationally scoring defense, top five in yards per game, top 10 in yards allowed per game. There's nothing they don't do well. The best thing, the most impressive thing to me is just how much better Carson Beck has gotten. I mean, he's extremely good right now. He is. He was outstanding in that game and just has played, it's impressive to me. They trusted him more and more as the season's gone on. And he's rewarded the trust by, you know, continuing to make big plays. They lead the nation in third down conversions, largely because of him. I mean, that's a great stat if you're a quarterback, if you if your team leads the nation in third down conversions. So nobody, not even Alabama, really wants to play Georgia right now. But Alabama will in the SEC championship, and that should still be a very good game.
Yeah, I feel like I've been saying all year that Michigan has been the most dominant team. But, I mean, you know, we do have to take into account their schedule. But the last few weeks, I would say that's shifted. You know, that Georgia, I think, overall now has been the most dominant team in football. And that's what surprised me. Pat mentioned Carson Beck. I did not expect this from their offense. They can strike so quickly. And it's happened a few times now where you look up and, you know, they trail or it's a tie game or something. And then you look back like literally right 15 minutes later and they've scored twice already. It's just scored two touchdowns or three touchdowns. It's crazy. And they set all kind of records. I know this past win, 28 consecutive wins, right? Which is that ties the SEC record. I think. Is that right, Pat?
Yes, ties the SEC record. For
and then a third straight year, 8-0 in the league, which is a record, I believe. It's just incredible. Just a he's built a monster there, much in the same way that, you know, a certain mentor of his did or has done in Tuscaloosa.
You know, they don't seem to have, like, the truly elite receiver other than Brock Bowers. Brock Bowers is a tight end, but they don't have that great, but they have like four or five guys that just get open all the time.
Yeah.
And so maybe if they were alone on one team, they would be that guy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Like you're looking for weaknesses and there just isn't any. They run the ball. They have a number of backs that run hard. They've got a good line. Beck's getting better. And yeah, you bring Bowers back. I told you guys to bet the Georgia and a Brock Bauer TD. They were going to feed him.
Yeah.
That was an easy parlay.
That was it yesterday. Dylan Bell is their eighth leading receiver coming into the game. He catches five balls for 90 yards and a touchdown, and he throws a touchdown too. I mean, like, they just got guy after guy after guy.
Yeah. Just goes on and on. All right, the other huge development in this chase, and this kind of parlays into Georgia in case they lose, but Florida State defeats Northern Alabama 58-13. They were losing 13-0 on the CW, which is known for its great dramas, including All-American, my favorite.
Yeah, there you go.
And it was on. It was right there on my CW. I was pretty excited. I saw it was on the CW. Bang, there it is.
I like the CW. You see the CW is like on field halftime, like show. It's just a single podium set on the field.
One guy
with one man behind.
Man, it's they fantastic. Should at least get one of the actors fantastic. From All American crossover. They're big on crossover spinoffs. They had you know this what? Thing. They'd go between commercial. It would go CW Sports, right? And it looked like a graphic design that I would make. Okay. It just said CW Sports, and it kind of moved across the screen. I'm like, oh, all right, a lot of money pumped into this.
Hey, one guy behind a podium is fine with me. There's too many people on the sideline in these halftime shows.
It's better than the NBC Sunday Night Football show where there's like 40 people and they're all nervous.
Yeah, right.
Everyone gets 5 seconds and they try to say the most outrageous thing because they're worried who's getting voted off the island and fight. Yeah. It's too many people here. Who's that guy? They got like people's kids on the thing, and you're like, what? Who is he? We have to have a wide receiver and a cornerback because it can't, you know. Yeah, I agree. Anyway, not funny. Jordan Travis, great quarterback, had a massive season, and it's been a ton of fun to watch. 2,755 yards this year, 20 TDs, just two picks, rushed for 7 touchdowns, horrific injury. We don't have an official prognosis, but he's not going to play again this season. Obviously, they got enough. Tate Rodemaker comes in, plays pretty well, but it's Northern Alabama. They got a Florida game at Florida, who it's got to feel disappointed they didn't beat Missouri.
Yeah.
But at least showed the fight to be in a game with Missouri.
Mm.
And then they're going to get a potentially 11-1 Louisville team. We'll see what Louisville does with Kentucky in the finale. Can Florida State get there? Even if they're undefeated, do they still get in? And I know this is a crazy thing to say, if per se Alabama beats Georgia. They got to get bumped by Washington this week. I don't know. I don't know what to say about Florida State. They're in a pickle right now.
Yeah.
They are. Yeah, I know. And the committee's going to be in a pickle. They can see how Florida State looks with Rademacher at quarterback, obviously, in a couple of very big games between now and when they have to make the decision, and see if how much drop off there is. Rademacher's pretty good. I saw him. Travis got hurt last year when they played at Louisville. I was at the game, and Rademacher came in and threw a couple big time touchdowns, bombs. And so he's not without ability, and he's not without a little bit of experience. But I mean, you reeled off the statistics. Jordan Travis has been a Heisman Trophy candidate, and you take him out of the mix, and the committee's got to, at least this was what the basketball committee always said, and it was a lot easier because 68 teams, not four, but the thing was we have to select and seed the team that's going to be on the court/field for the playoff. And so if they're dramatically, even if they win these games, they don't look good, you know, does that, can you bump them out and say, sorry, you're not as good as you were, and we're putting somebody else in? I mean, it's a brutal turn of events for Florida State. It's going to be a difficult situation for the committee. One of these teams, Florida or Louisville, may solve it for them. And Louisville's had a bit of a charmed season, but this is another potential break for them to be playing a diminished Florida State team to potentially win the ACC championship and finish 12-1.
Man, my thought, even with Jordan Travis, was that, you know, that Florida State was going to have a little issue at the Swamp at night. And now I think it's a real issue. I think it would have been even bigger of an issue had Florida finished off Missouri and kind of come in with that momentum. They barely lost in the end. And speaking of charm seasons, right, Missouri has had quite a magically charmed season. Awesome final drive by Brady Cook moving the ball down the field for Missouri, which that was mayhem in the end of that game. They finished the game. But virtually half the teams are in the locker room. Eli Drinkwitz is in the middle of his post-game ESPN interview when officials put 1 second back on the clock. That was wild. But anyway, so back to Florida State. I thought they were going to have trouble in the Swamp anyway, and now real trouble. And I think they've got some other injury issues too. There's a lineman that probably is going to be out, it sounds like. So it's in a way, it's hard to see them beating both Florida and Louisville without him and without some of the other pieces they may be missing. And so that opens the door, right, for somebody. Florida State's schedule is not difficult enough to survive a loss, especially without your starting quarterback, which the committee will factor in. So that opens the door for a one-loss Oregon, for a one-loss Texas, maybe even, the one-loss, SEC champion Alabama or something. I mean, it pops open a spot for somebody potentially.
Florida Graham Mertz broke his collarbone, so he's Ooh. They're gonna have to beat Florida Uh-oh. State without one more Ooh. Note on this Missouri game, just That's briefly right. Marvin Harrison Jr. is the best receiver in the country.
Yeah,
but man, Luther Burden III is not far away.
He's outstanding.
He almost caught it. It got reversed because the ball did scrape the ground. There was one play in end zone. It got tipped by someone else. He adjusted and almost made this diving catch. Oh my God, this guy.
Yeah.
So freaking good.
Incredibly good.
You're just watching every play and you're like, I'm like, oh, geez. So, and he's got another year. So Marv is moving on. It's the Luther show next year. Yeah, I just don't know. I mean, like, you sit there and go, would you? I cannot fathom a situation where you have a undefeated ACC champ not get in. Okay, and I'm not arguing that should be the case. At the same time, are you going to tell me that if Alabama beats Georgia in a classic, that you're sitting there saying, okay, we can take this Florida State team or that Georgia team with one loss?
Yeah,
yeah.
best four or not. Like, I don't like
even undefeated Florida State. You're talking about
even undefeated.
Yeah.
You're like,
yeah, that's a good question.
Right. I'm not making the point, Florida State fans. You know, I'm just saying that's the problem. That would be you earned your cream corn. Because that's a hard call. It's a hard call because this Georgia team looks fantastic. And they would be favored by probably 14.5 against Florida State. And, you know, if not more, I don't know. But it's just sort of like, what do you do? All right. Regardless of what you think of Florida State, Washington has got to get in the top four this week. Their resume has to be good enough now.
Yeah, it is. I got an argument for number two.
They survived dramatic game played inside a washing machine, at least the first half, in Corvallis. There was like back-to-back series where both running backs were dropping. Nobody could catch it. It was a mess. But Washington wins 22-20. They had a 22-10 halftime lead. Oregon State makes its push. Comeback. Roma Dunze, incredible. Penix Jr. was good. I really like the Husky defense, though. Which had been a question and made some plays. They get an apple cup coming up, which could be a spicy apple, cinnamon apple, little apple, because Washington State destroyed the carcass of the Colorado Buffalo program.
And they need it to go to a bowl.
Yep. And so there's still that, but that Oregon thing looms. Oregon's still got to get past Oregon State, but they look ridiculous. But thoughts on what went down in Corvallis, Pat?
Yeah, look, I've been saying for really since the beginning of the season, if Washington can get through the three-game gauntlet to begin November at USC, Utah, at Oregon State, that's a hell of an accomplishment, and now they've done it. And, okay, beating USC, no longer perhaps the accomplishment we thought it was going to be, but on the flip side, who's the only team that's gone into Tucson and beaten Arizona? Washington. Also beat Oregon. I mean, they have a great resume at this point. They've had some close games. They have won all of them. And so I think, like to Ross's point, I would put Washington number two right now. I'd have Georgia one, Washington two, Ohio State three, Michigan four, probably at this point. Or maybe Ohio State two, Washington three. But anyway, Washington would very comfortably be in my playoff bracket at this point. They've done a great job.
Yeah. Yeah. Our top 10 last night, we had Washington 3, but it was tough. I thought about flipping Ohio State at 2 and dropping them down because Washington's resume gets better and better. And the Washington defense is confusing. They allowed 32 points to Cal. 33 points to Oregon, 33 points to Stanford, 42 to USC. But they've done a good job in spots like last night, allowing 20 to Oregon State, and in the very end, putting up pretty good fight. Earlier this year, 7 points to Michigan State, 7 points to Arizona State. So they've really been all over the place. I don't know what to expect, but. But Michael Penix, you know, and he didn't have a great day at all. And, you know, I think players like Jaden Daniels, Bo Nix, even Jalen Milroe are putting up numbers to catch him kind of in this kind of Heisman race. He's stumbled a little bit there. He was 13 of 28, 162 against Oregon State. I mean, obviously the weather was terrible. Though? Right. Yeah.
I mean,
the weather was terrible. And, yeah.
Yeah.
So there's that to consider. But he's had a couple of those games this year. You know, the Arizona State game was pretty bad. But in the end, though, he made the plays, right? He made that third down converted to basically secure the game. And, Apple Cups, huge games in Washington and Oregon next week. Yes. Yeah, Oregon State and Washington State, Apple Cup and Civil War. I think both of those series will continue. I think both administrations are working to continue those series. Hopefully they do, despite the conference realignment stuff, because they're two fun rivalries. And next week, you know, a lot of rivals can knock off. We talked about Florida State, right? And there's Alabama, Auburn, Georgia Tech.
Kentucky,
a lot of rivals, that can knock off CFP contenders. But, yeah, I mean, Louisville is that. You don't think of Louisville as a CFP contender, but if everything breaks right, you never know.
I want the three-part athletic story on what happened to Washington the night before they played Arizona State.
Yeah, I'm sure that's coming. Four parter.
Better have been a hell of a party, because that is a puzzlement. I'm looking at their schedule and it's like, oh, that's pretty good, pretty good. Yeah. What was that?
Yeah.
No, I watched a lot of that game. They were frankly very fortunate to win.
Yeah,
they had a pick six on a bad decision by Kenny Dillingham. Mm-hmm. That otherwise they might well have
and
lost.
A terrible PI. I remember it was DPI.
Yes, oh,
it
was horrible.
Like the worst defensive pass interference penalty in a big time situation of the season.
Yeah. Because Oregon just destroyed Arizona State. It's Arizona's going to get to be a top 15 team this week. Oregon still is. That's great wins. I agree. I'd put Washington two. I mean, first off, it doesn't matter, but I think that resume. Yeah. Part of the Pac-12's problem is they're all beating up on each other because there's depth. And so like Utah is probably going to drop out of the rankings, but still a good team. Like the Big Ten's got nothing.
No,
they've got nothing. It's like brutal. Penn State is okay. They're a top 20 team, but that's
the drop off between those three. Penn State, Ohio State,
Iowa.
And
I mean,
Michigan.
Iowa played nobody. The only good team they played was Penn State. They lost. What was it? 31 to zip.
They're averaging 18 points a game, Dan.
Yeah, I know. And
here's my Iowa stat. Sorry, okay. I gotta break in with this breaking stat here.
Breaking
fantastic.
Stat from 40.
I was averaging 18.45 points per game so far. The last team, if they beat Nebraska and they don't, up that over 19, which they probably won't. The last team to win 10 games while scoring fewer than 19 points a game was San Diego State in 1976. So we're looking at like the best bad team or worst good team in the last 50 years, basically, in Iowa.
The best bad team or the worst good team.
That
sweet corn to you, buddy.
Saw the Brian Ferentz, Kirk Ferentz emotional ending of that game. I think Brian Ferentz got a Gatorade bath in his last home game as Iowa's offensive coordinator, and then dad and son hugged and everything. And just minutes before that, they showed the Iowa offensive drives of the game. And I don't think a one was like for more than like 11 yards, like the previous, six drives.
It's probably a sponsored item, like Farm Bureau insurance or something. Yeah.
Drive of the game.
I may have told this story on the pod before. When this happened, I was in school at Mississippi State. Sylvester Croom was the coach, and Mississippi State couldn't much move the ball. And Jack Crystal, longtime radio broadcaster for the Bulldogs, he lived in Tupelo. So he'd drive from Tupelo to Starkville to call the game and then drive back. And he was this old curmudgeon, And they did a drive of the game after each game. And one of the games in which Mississippi State scored 0 points, he said, "The drive of the game is my drive back home to Tupelo." That's fantastic.
I saw something. I didn't look this up, but like seven teams in the Big Ten don't have the 25. Like there's a lot of in the Big Ten. The offensive coordinators of the Big Ten do not want the Ferentz standard to be like the Mendoza line, right?
No.
Like you're all getting
fired. They'd all be fired. Yeah.
This league is so bad. How could they all be so bad?
I don't know, but it's horrible. I mean, it is the worst collection of offenses I've ever seen in an alleged power conference. I mean,
they have money,
it's pitiful.
They have tradition, there's recruits, they have fans, this has nothing to do with anything except I just go back to all these bad coaches and their bad programs complaining about Jim Harbaugh. Like, get off the phone with the commissioner and try to drop a play. Like, it's so bad watching the Big Ten. Like, no wonder they expanded. Thank God. Like, I looked at it was Wisconsin, Nebraska on NBC last night. Like, oh my gosh.
Yeah. I think of NBC and CBS, the matchups that they are getting are rough.
Who's watching this?
The amazing thing, none of the head coaches in the Big Ten West are going to get fired this year.
No, hell no. Everyone went 5-6-6 or something, right?
Yeah.
Wisconsin won 24-17 in overtime. I did not even know. Sorry, I missed it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just Wisconsin went 6-5 with the victory. Nebraska fell to 5-6. It's just I don't know. I don't know. I think Washington and Oregon, these guys are looking in like there is a level of crazy over here. Like, I'm not sure we're ready for this Michigan, like, Ohio State thing. Like, this is crazy. But the rest of them, like, yeah, yawn.
Yeah.
We'll be all right. These guys can't complete a pass. USC, UCLA. We had some random rivalry games here that pop up. They always play a little earlier. UCLA hands USC another loss. What was the fun? I'm sorry. 38-20. It wasn't even close to that. My buddies at Diag Partners, Custom Staffing Solution. They gave me a stat. Custom Staffing Solutions, Diag Partners.
Okay. Yeah.
USC is a pair of 2-point conversions away from having lost their last 7 games.
Oof. Oh, my goodness.
Ooh.
Wow.
Pretty good. Custom Staffing Solutions. That's what I'm saying. They can
at least you're pronouncing it right. At least.
I'm getting better.
Diag now.
Diag. Diag. I've learned it. I'm getting better. Anyway, that could be 7 consecutive for USC. Now, they didn't lose those games, so we'll give them credit for that, I guess. But 7-5 for Lincoln Riley. They've lost 5 of 6. Complete, like, that. Yeah. So they lost. They beat Arizona 43-41. They beat Cal 50-49.
Yeah.
What happened? Like, is this guy? This guy could be in the hot seat. I mean, I don't think he is, but like,
that's what Dan Mullen says.
Dan Mullen said wrong coach on the hot seat. Chip Kelly should be on the hot seat. U.S. What a disaster! I think I had them for the playoffs. They had the Heisman winner, the playoffs, the number one team, the hottest program going. This is terrible.
Yeah, no, it's a complete bust. It is.
How about that insight? It's terrible.
It's a complete and total bust. I mean, Caleb Williams is leaving. I'm sure they'll have other good quarterbacks, but they won't be that good next year. You've got to do something to figure out how to play some defense. You got to figure out how to protect a quarterback. I mean, Lincoln Riley, I believe, Dan, you used the phrase front runner on him, and we're going to find out now. He's either going to circle the wagons and figure it out there. He's going to like bolt to the NFL or something. But if I'm USC, I'm putting him on the clock for next year. I'm saying next year is a must win year for you. And we're not talking 7-5. We want 9 wins or better.
Yeah. What are they paying him? I think it's around $10 million, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. I think it is.
Got that house. That house is pretty nice.
Yeah, the house is very nice. So I don't know what happens to his teams in general late in the year. Because we saw a little bit at Oklahoma as well. But, they've lost, I think it's their last
5 of 7.
November games.
Oh, yeah.
USC. Like going back to last year,
yeah.
Like they've lost their last 5 games played in November. It's wild. I picked them to win the Pac-12 and get into the playoff. Yeah, it's just very 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 unexpected, and I can't put my finger on it except that the defense is not good and hasn't been good under Lincoln Riley going back again to his Oklahoma days. It's crazy.
Yeah. On the flip, let's try to get through a few of these. Arizona just keeps going. 42-18 over Utah. One of the most impressive victories of the season by anybody. They just keep getting better. They're 8-3. They've beaten 4 ranked teams. They're still alive for the conference championship. They're climbing in the polls. Jed Fish doing an incredible job. The program is humming. And they're going into the Big 12 next year, which is always looking for a team. You know, I mean, K-State is obviously, they had a great victory. But you're not looking at a league going forward that's going to be that hard to win, that you're sitting there going, God, we need dream seasons. And you're going to get an automatic bid. So Arizona's in a terrific place going forward. Pat, thoughts on that?
No, I'm incredibly impressive. And, you know, people are going to come at Jed Fish this offseason, so we'll see. And this is a tough time for Arizona to be put into a bidding war. You saw the
school's broke.
School president,
right? Yeah.
Yeah, school president Bobby Robbins came out like, we need to trim $240 million.
Ooh.
Which means some of their sports may be getting eliminated.
Is that just athletics or like the whole school?
University as a whole. But
some athletic teams are not football.
Right. Right. Yeah. And so, yes, look out if you're, you know, cross country, swimming, volleyball, whatever. Anyway, that will put Arizona in an interesting position because you'd like to reward Jed Fish. You'd like to keep Jed Fish. Other people are going to come after Jed Fish. And can you do it? I don't know. But this team, hats off to them. I mean, that was a dead program when Fish got there, and they are very much awake and alive, and they have been great in Tucson, as I alluded to. Other than that loss to Washington, they're undefeated at home, and they've stomped UCLA down there. They stomp Utah down there. It's very strong.
Yeah, the Arizona president, Bobby Robbins, is originally from the South, spent a long time at Stanford, and he's been in Arizona maybe eight or nine years or so. And he's big time into athletics and football. So I would imagine, even despite all the budget woes there, that they'll do everything they can to keep Jed Fish. Because I think a lot of folks are interested in at least talking to him about their job. And there was I think a lot of people in the industry were linking, you know, if something happened at UCLA, linking him to that job. But I mean, we didn't address them when we talked about USC and UCLA, but there was the report out locally in LA that was, to say the least, a little flimsy of a report about Chip Kelly being fired after the season. And probably one of those reports that most of us don't really trust, because it's quite risky to say a coach is going to be fired after the season when he has two games left, and lo and behold, guess what happened, right? We'll go out and you pound your rival. So,
and they got Cal left. They could go 8-4 back with Dante Moore still as a sophomore. Right. Like if they get Dante Moore to say, I'm staying,
right,
I'm back.
I believe this could be the second time that Chip was on the hot seat and smoked USC and kept his job.
Mm.
Yeah.
USC's 2021, helping
him out.
Same
helping
thing.
Him out. Auburn. Quite a night. They cut a $1.85 million check to our Aggies down in Las Cruces. Jerry Kill and the whiskey toting, peeing on your enemy's logo. Aggies. New Mexico State walks into the Plains, beats Auburn 31-10.
It's unbelievable.
31-10. Usually it's like, well, we needed a block field goal at the end to sneak out. $1.85 million going to buy a lot of that Pistol Pete alcohol or whatever they're selling down there. Is it Pistol
That's
Pete?
Right.
They got a whole liquor store. This is the Agarita. There's all sorts of stuff. Absolutely. Hubbard's like, well, maybe we'll get our ass kicked by New Mexico State and Alabama will take us lightly. That's about their only hope. What happened?
New Mexico State's a good team. That's actually really good.
They're 9-3 now.
They should have lost
to UMass. They lost to UMass. I think transitive property. If Auburn beats Alabama, Alabama beats Georgia, UMass national champ.
There you go.
We're two steps away from bringing that trophy to Amherst.
Auburn had 213 yards of total offense. 213. They had about, I think they have, they had like 10 or 12 drives.
12 on the ground.
And they had 12 first downs. Total domination. I had a friend send me this tweet from an Auburn Twitter account. I will read it. In Nick Saban's first year at Alabama, he lost to UL Monroe the week before the Iron Bowl to go 6-5. He has won 6 championships since. In Hugh Freeze's first year at Auburn, he lost to a much better New Mexico State team the week before the Iron Bowl to go 6-5.
Oh,
dot,
go.
Dot, dot.
Good try. Good try.
Hey, we don't know. You don't know.
You never know. Yeah.
Got him right.
Know.
Count him.
No, for sure. No. Never know.
I remember hearing that when Rich Rodriguez was at Michigan and they lost to Toledo. Mm. And he trotted that one out. Well, somebody trotted it out. Mm-hmm. I mean, it wasn't Rich Rodriguez, but Nick Saban lost to ULM. We lost it. And it's like, yeah.
David Hale from ESPN had a phenomenal stat that there's been two games in the last two seasons in which an underdog of 21 or more points won by 21 or more points. Both of them were New Mexico State, and both of the teams they beat were coached by Hugh Freeze. They did it to Liberty last year.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I chalked it up totally as Hugh not paying attention to Liberty because he was trying to get the Auburn job. But now they've done it again when Hugh's at Auburn. So, incredible. Our boy Diego Pavia, the alleged urinator, he's just had a phenomenal season. Nearly 3,200 yards of total offense. He's making that team go. And Jerry Kill has built a friggin' program down there.
Let me read you the lyrics. Dramatic reading. I haven't had a dramatic reading. To the New Mexico State fight song. It's a great one. Aggies, oh Aggies, the hills send back the cry. We're here to do or die. Aggies, oh Aggies. We'll win this game or know the reason why. And when we win this game, we'll buy a keg of booze and drink it to the Aggies till we wobble in our shoes.
Perfect.
That's pretty good.
I think Rocky Top with its, the moonshine is still the best alcohol-related fight song, but that's pretty good. Won the game. There was a keg of booze. Not beer, booze.
Booze, yeah.
So I don't know what happened in Las Cruces last night, but check the police blotter. Police blotter. Better test. If it was ever a night, you got 1.85 to buy a keg of booze. Go get them. All right. There's a lot going on. We haven't got to everything, but we'll start wrapping this up. We tend to hand out the Heisman every week, our small sample Heisman, rather than, wait to the end of the year. Anyone got a small sample Heisman? Who's ready?
I'm ready.
Okay.
We normally do try to give this to maybe small school kind of players. I just can't help but give it to Bo Nix, who may eventually be the real Heisman winner. It depends on, I think, how Oregon's season goes. I think Bo Nix had more than 300 yards passing and 5 touchdowns at halftime of the game against his former offensive coordinator at Arizona State, Kenny Dillingham, now coach there. He finished 24-29, 404 yards and 6 touchdowns. 82% completion percentage for Bo Nix against Arizona State. Nix has been one of the most accurate quarterbacks in the country. I think I gave this stat out earlier in the year, and it remains true. It's remarkable. He has not had a game this year in which he has thrown for worse than 72% completion. It's been remarkable. His last 6 games, he's got about 25 touchdowns and 1 interception. It's really something. And if Oregon can beat Oregon State and then beat Washington in the championship game, maybe Bo Nix is your Heisman winner. I can't remember when the ballots are due. They do the Monday after championship game.
Yes.
Yeah. So he's got a chance to perform on the stage there against Washington, and he's right there.
All right. I believe it or not, I really could say something nice about a lot of people.
We're giving a Heisman out.
I know. But see, that's like, I could say nice things about whole teams. It's harder to find an individual person.
Give
but
a
I
Heisman
got one
to the team. We've done it before. I'm lazy.
No, I've got somebody. I'm going to give it to Louisville quarterback Jack Plummer. They're 10-1. They won a shootout in Miami that was going back and forth, and Plummer threw for 308 yards and 3 touchdowns. And the last couple of games here, they've won, but they've won close against Virginia and against Miami, Florida. And in the fourth quarter of both of those games, he's thrown long touchdowns. He had a 70-some yarder against Virginia and a 58-yarder here against Miami in the fourth quarter. Louisville's had this penchant for breaking huge plays late in games this year. Plummer was a transfer from Cal, the fifth year guy, sixth year maybe even. He before that, he was a backup for Jeff Brohm at Purdue, and so he knew the system. So Brohm's like, hey, we don't have a quarterback. Come in. I'll plug you in. You'll at least know what you're doing. And he's played very, very well. He is your new your modern-day quarterback in this era where you get fifth- and sixth-year guys. He's got some flecks of gray in his hair. He's like 24 years old, been around the block, and he's having by far his best year of college football. So Jack Plummer.
All right. I am going to give my small sample. There's plenty of choices. Gosh, so many good games right here. But I'm going to give it to Preston Stone, the quarterback for the SMU Mustangs. And it's more of a team award. But 15 to 23, 286, two touchdowns. Also rushed the ball for a touchdown as SMU beat Memphis, came from behind. A pretty dramatic game, 38-34. They are 9-2. They are 7-0 in the ACC, American Athletic Conference, and headed to the championship game because Tulane and I can't remember now is playing each other. I'm sorry. I didn't do a good job with this. Tulane and UTSA are still have to play each other. So SMU should be able to get in there. And great season by SMU. And the Americans got a heck of a race. 3-7-0 teams right now. Should be a dramatic final week and then championship game in the future. This would be really dramatic because these guys would probably be playing for that 16th or that 12th spot. It's a pretty good race out in the Mountain West also. But the one thing I'm looking forward to the playoff is bringing a little more attention to these guys as, hey, that's a pretty interesting go. But great season for SMU. SMU's had one heck of a fall, okay? They're 9-2, and they got themselves in the Atlantic Coast Conference, and they're pretty good. And they're spending money, and they got some players. So congratulations to Preston and the Mustangs. All right. Time. We said some mean things. We might have fired some guys. We might not have. We talked about Uncle T positively and negatively. Do we have anything nice to say? Can we? This is our segment to try to say something nice or not. Pat, can you say something nice?
Yes, I am prepared for this one. Okay.
Here we go.
I'm going to say something nice about Butch Jones and Arkansas State. Butch got fired at Tennessee. He was lampooned for his corny slogans and everything. Got the rebound job at Arkansas State. It wasn't going very well. Entered this season, people like, hey, might get fired. They began the season losing 73-0 to Oklahoma. They then lost to Memphis 37-3. Their first two games, they were outscored 110-3. And everybody's like, oh, Butch is gone. He is so fired. Yeah, you know, they scuffle around. They beat some bad teams. They get to 3-2. They lose two more. They're 3-4. Everybody's like, ah, Butch is fired. Butch is fired. But now they finish. They're winning three of their last four. They are bowl eligible. And I don't know whether this has ever happened before to a team in a season. They gave up 70 to start. And then they scored 70. They scored 77 points against Texas State on Saturday. I think they were an underdog in that game, and they won 77-31. I really don't even know what happened. I just saw the score and thought, that is the craziest thing I've ever seen, because I remember that 73-0 loss. And I think Brick by Brick has built himself another season. We'll see. Can you fire a guy after he takes Arkansas State to a bowl game? I don't think you can.
No. Yeah. Sticking around. I'm going to say something nice about two coaches. So we've got two nice things. Greg Knox is the interim coach at Mississippi State. It is his third different interim coaching stint of his career in the last 6 years. He was, after Dan Mullen left the Bulldogs for Florida, he was Mississippi State's interim coach in 2017 for the Taxpayer Bowl. They won. At Florida, after Dan Mullen was fired, he was the interim coach for two games. They went 1-1 in those games. And now, after the dismissal of Zach Arnett, he's Mississippi State's interim coach again. And they beat Southern Miss 41-20 over the weekend. And so he's 1-0. He drove a four-wheeler into the Mississippi State locker room after the game very Mississippi thing to do, while that song was playing, dun, 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 And he's like revving up the four wheeler, driving it through the team, through the locker room. So give it up for Greg Knox. He's 3-1 as interim coach. We'll have the Egg Bowl to coach this coming weekend. And then David Braun at Northwestern, remarkable. Yep. He got the full time job earlier this year. Northwestern is 6-5, bowl eligible after all that that program has been through. I mean, Braun arrived. First of all, he's a young guy. He's in his 30s. Is he, what? I'm trying to think of what age he had. I did not prepare his age, but he's a young guy. He arrived there just this past year. It was kind of an FCS coach, and bam, got the interim job after all the Pat Fitzgerald stuff, and now lands what I think nobody expected. The lands the full time job with in a remarkable season, heading to a bowl game.
Seems like
quick
you should
add
be
on that.
Go ahead.
Yeah, he should be Big Ten Coach of the Year. Hell yeah.
I mean, we can't give it to Harbaugh.
No. Harbaugh hasn't coached
half. That would be funny,
Harbaugh's
though.
He's missed half the season.
So he's out.
That would be good. That'd be great.
Ryan Day or David Braun. Take your pick.
Yeah, Uncle T wouldn't vote for Harbaugh at this point. Like, I mean, you got to show up for work. Got to show up. Yeah. But yeah, so it's Ryan Day, and then no one else did a good job. So pretty good. Yeah, I think it's him. Let's go with the feel good. Go ahead, Pat.
He gets thrust into this position and they send him to Big Ten Media Day, and the AD, Derek Gregg, hides from everybody and won't talk, but they throw him out there and he does a great job. 45 minutes with the media, unbelievable, good answers and everything. And he's sitting there saying, yeah, I just got this position. You know, we're trying to keep the team together. We're working through this. Oh, and my wife's about to give birth to like our fourth child on Friday. Like they had scheduled the delivery or whatever. I mean, he had so much going on, and he has handled it incredibly well.
Yeah, great job. All right, I'm going to say something nice about the Texas Longhorns. They get out of a snake pit of Ames on Saturday night, 26-16. Texas has not looked impressive since they beat Kansas. They certainly looked impressive in beating Alabama. But they have been slinking around. They beat Kansas State by 3. They beat TCU by 3. They beat Iowa State by 10, but that was a very close game. They beat Houston by 7. They are just getting by. But here's the thing. They are getting by. And they are walking into these road venues where they are hated. They are blowing up their league. They already hated them all. They always hated Texas. And in the past, Texas folded. Texas couldn't handle these games. You sit down at the end of the year and go, how the hell did you guys have not win? How did you end up 8-4, whatever their season was? Texas is winning the games. And they're going in against Texas Tech. They got one more, and then they're going to get to that Big 12 championship game. Might be Oklahoma State, might be Kansas State. We don't know. But I give the Longhorns credit. They've had Quinn Ewers in and out. They lost their top running back. They're surviving the games. And yeah, they're not the most impressive looking thing in the world right now, but they win. And it was that one wild Red River, but they should be able to avenge that. I give credit to Texas for showing me a little more heart and I don't know, just toughness, mental, and figuring out ways to win that they haven't had in a little while. So good job to Steve Sarkisian and everyone on the Longhorns for doing it. At the end of the game, you win or you lose, and they've won 10. They only lost one.
Yeah. No, you're right. You remember, like, Tom Herman had a bad record in close games, if I recall. That was the thing. They couldn't win close games. They're doing a nice job of that now. Ray, real quick, let me tell you about the last 4 touchdowns Arkansas State scored to get to 77 points.
Okay.
91-yard fumble return, 93-yard kickoff return, 87-yard interception return, 50-yard interception return.
Wow.
That is insane.
Wow. Let me give you one more stat now that I did a little more. You gave me a sec to look up. This is only their second 10-win season since 2009. And that 10-win season required a bowl victory. They went 10-4 in 2018.
Oh, yeah, that was the famous Sugar Bowl victory, right, over Ole Miss, where the quarterback, what's his name, Texas quarterback, stood up and says, Texas is back.
Texas is back, and then they went 8-5, 7-3, 5-7, 8-5. So, and before that 10-win season, they went 5-7, 5-7, 6-7, 8-5, 9-4, 8-5, 5-7. And shame on all that, because those Texas should never be doing that. But this is a season where they could very easily be sitting at 8-3 right now, 7-4, whatever, and going, gosh, how did we do this? They're showing something. So good on the Longhorns. All right, that's our show, unless you guys got anything else.
Nope.
All right, this week we will do a show on Tuesday. We will hype up. It'll be a little longer probably. We'll make our picks then. It'll carry you through your drives. I'm just guessing we're going to have a ton to talk about. Your travel over the weekend. Games start Friday, really Thursday. It's an awesome few days, but there'll probably only be one podcast unless an emergency arises.
Unless so nephew probably. T, you know, enters the chat.
Mr. T. Else. Someone's like, Mr. T has to be an uncle to somebody, right? Like, is it him? Tony Soprano. We have, like, I put out a tweet as a joke. It's not Tom Brady, because people were like laughing.
Right.
It was Tom.
Oh, yeah.
The New York Post actually wrote a story saying I debunked the rumor that it was Tom Brady. There's a literal new. I love modern media. I wrote a joke. I go, I, along with Ross Dellinger, can report Uncle T is not Tom Brady. Carry on. It was just a joke. And then there's a New York. Someone sends me a New York Post hit. The story. I love the New York Post. If the Daily Mail picked it up, I'd really be something. And if I really had my way, we could talk about the LSU women's basketball team, which is like,
oh my,
let's
goodness.
Go, baby. Oh, we're going to be the LSU women's basketball team podcast once all this mayhem ends. Yeah.
We'll cover that.
Oh yeah. There. I mean, you don't even want to know. If you don't know, you don't know, but you're going to know. Unbelievable situation down there. Who knows? People feuding on social media. Kim Mulkey just, they should have done a reality show on this team. It's going to be.
Let's end the pod before we start launching into Mulkey.
Mulkey.
Oh, Kim. Mm-hmm.
This is fantastic. I can't wait. Women's basketball. It's getting more exciting than the men now.
Sure.
Yeah. Men, it's getting chaotic. This is the stuff we need. The women's basketball fans are like those fans of like up and coming. We just want to focus on the positive. No, you don't.
Yeah, no.
No, you don't. No. What makes it exciting is Uncle T. What makes it exciting is NFL coaches trying to kill each other. Like, that's no drama. Anyway, that's it. That's our show. Continue to subscribe. Share us on social media. It's been a fun season to go through this with you guys, but it ain't over. It's just getting better. And we will talk to you later.